Good. So we have some time for some questions, some comments, some discussion. I hope that folks might... Here, and I'm going to ask you to, this is for the recording, to just use this.
Horace Branham.
To speak up.
Horace Branham. Have you noticed, everyone, that Roger always has a pencil in hand in seminar?
That's true.
And right now, there is a pencil. A pencil is what an editor uses, not a pen. He can change with the pencil. He can cut. He can erase in a practice of editing. And the whole issue of editing has not come up in this brilliant session until this point. And I want to bear witness that Roger is a remarkable, stupendous editor. Very, very moving to have been edited by him. He is generous, never condescending, never, I know more than you, author, editor. And he worked over word after word of one of my texts for the History of Private Life, making it better at every step, working, making me feel brighter as he worked along. And I wanted just to thank you, Roger. And he gave the title to the chapter, the Refuge d'Antime. Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a pleasure. Thank you very much.
No pressure.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. I don't even think the microphone's on.
It's for the recording. That's why.
I'm not a cultural historian or a literary historian or anything. In fact, I did my dissertation with David Bien in the early 1990s on military history, and I always thought that you had a great career, Monke, as a military historian. And I wondered, I've read your article about the École de Mézières many, many, many times, and why it just sticks out like a sore thumb in your entire body of work. Why did you write that? I've always wondered.
I am sorry to have read that, to have done it now, but. But it was in connection with what Bob said. There was a general framework because you know that at the time we were also working with Dominique Julia, Marie-Madeleine Comper on the history of education in France, and working in the with the perspective of the sociology of the recruitment in order to show, for example, that the people who enter in the Jesuit college was perhaps with a broader social origin, more diverse social origin than it was already often thought. So within this context of the history of education, which was focused mainly on the primary and secondary education, we thought also about this institution created by the monarchy, and particularly the École Militaire in the 1751, and after the École du Génie de Mézières and the École d'Artillerie, where the young Bonaparte was a student. So it was a context. I was also in the military, and to justify the fact I was not fighting against an invisible enemy. I was not only the librarian described by Bob, but also I decided to work on this École du Génie de Mézières, because the library in Versailles was within the École du Génie now. And it was it's the reason why I think the general who was the director of this école, because I have time to go to the archive, particularly in Vincennes, where the archives were kept. So, as ever, it was contingency and something which was in a framework, because with Dominique and late Marie-Madeleine Comper, we have published in 1976. I hate all these dates, because sometimes I have the tendency to think it was 1876. 1476. No, we published this book on the education in France between 16th and 18th century, and Dominique follows this path with extraordinary contribution to the sociology of education. After, with I shift more into the direction described of the history of the book or the written culture. But I hope you are not be too in despair reading this this work.
Bonjour, Roger. As I've been listening to the talks, I've been thinking, do you see yourself as having started with the history of the book, but given us a framework that will allow us to adapt to the new media landscape that we're now living in, and how do you think your work might fit into that?
Bob has written a lot of things, and with another experience than myself, about this. What I think, and it was also a point made by Colin, is this historical knowledge of the long durée of the written culture a possible or necessary or useful instrument for trying to decipher where are the main ruptures, the discontinuity, or sometimes the behind the discontinuity forms of continuity. And also, we can try, but everyone here, this kind of exercise without a particular expertise on the digital on the digital world. I think there are two elements. The first element would be, for me, what is the radical discontinuity is the fact that in the digital world there is a separation between one, the text and the materiality. Of course, it's a materiality which gives access to text. But in a role for a Greek or Roman reader of the second century before Christ, or for the reader of a manuscript codex, or for the reader of a printed text, there is an indissociable relation between the object he has in his hand or her hand and the text which is in this object. In the digital culture, which is not immaterial, there is nothing more material than all these devices we use. And when you have to buy it, you realize that they are material. This linkage is suppressed because the object could be the vehicle of any form of text if it exists in the digital form. And this has profound consequences, it seems to me. For example, for the relationship between the fragment and the totality, no one is obliged to read all the pages of a book, except if they was written by one of the three colleagues here. But for the other, but nevertheless, the materiality of the inscription imposes a perception, even unconscious, of the totality. And also, the extraction of any specific passage refers to the place, to the location in which this fragment is within the totality, because it's a fragment which has play a role in a demonstration, an argumentation, or a fiction, a narrative. This relation, I don't want to say it's absolutely impossible in the digital form, but it's transformed, profoundly transformed. And when the idea that perhaps once the fragment will be no more a fragment, but a kind of textual entity in itself, which is liberated or disconnected from any form of relation or with other elements in the written culture. I don't think it's a diagnosis of a little absurd, but it seems to me that something has changed for this. And the second element, which was the element of by Colin, is the tension between the category I tried to describe in one of the paragraphs, that is to say, singularity of the writing, originality of the aesthetics, and intellectual property, which are constantly challenged by the possibilities of the technology. And the tension is for the publisher, perhaps for some of the author, to keep something of the traditional category in a new form of inscription, which could easily borrow them, erase them, with the collective process of writing and rewriting, with the fact that criteria which was linking singularity, originality could be also erased, and the permanent conflict about the literary property or the intellectual property. So it seems to me, it's just a sketchy answer, but it seems to me that we can mobilize, but many people have tried to do this, we can mobilize this historical knowledge within the framework of discussion which are quite exclusively technical or legal. But something could be learned from this radical differentiation, which is blurred by the fact that we are still in the tree culture. My pencil, many printed books, journals, reviews, diaries, periodicals, and the digital culture. But it's not a reason for underestimate, it seems to me, the effect produced by this dissociation between the text and the materiality in which it is inscribed.
A little bit on how you found the specificity of the cultural representations in reading and books as opposed to other forms of cultural representation like music and art. I know Lynn Hunt has written about, but what did you see in reading in the book in particular that is not pertinent or is different from those other forms of cultural presentation?
Fundamental question we discussed yesterday with Bob, which was about the legitimacy of the extension of a category as reading to different symbolic production. And you say I want to say perhaps everyone has this polarization of this tension between, on the one hand, to consider that it's not illegitimate to think that culture is an assemblage of text, as Segertz, or that we can read an image, a city, a text, and on the other hand, to be conscious that the procedure for the deciphering are not identical. And the sequentiality, linearity, successivity, which is given by the text, is not the same for the deciphering of painting, or still less for the interpretation of a landscape or of urban space. And this is an important tension. And some author or some are more inclined to insist about the homogeneity or to use a category which is encompassing these different practices of decipherment, and others are more inclined to insist upon the reducibility of one manner of reading with other, which could be reading only metaphorically in relation with reading directly connected with the reading of a text. And I think it's a tension can be present. It's the reason why I make this opposition between Bourdieu and Goethe, and think perhaps we could try to, in my Victor Cousin eclecticism, to assemble one with the other. But also, Don McKenzie, for example. There is no one more interested than McKenzie to decipher the specific procedure of reading of the written word. And at the same time, at the beginning of the sociology, bibliography and sociology of text, he states that you can consider as a text and consequently as an object made to be read, not only iconographic production, but even the landscape, when the landscape is organized as a symbolic system by the population occupying this landscape. And so you have always this tension. And for me, it's always a problematic perspective and to try to understand the status of the use of text and reading when it's not a discourse which has to be read because it has a written inscription, and a reading which is the practice connected with this. It was also the tension. It's paradoxical because Mackenzie could look at the second, more linked with the idea of a specificity of reading and text, where he has, at the beginning, he makes his postulate that there is the kind of system of symbolic expression, which is a text, whatever it may be, included, as I said, an organized and symbolically charged landscape. And an author like Orest Ranum and myself, will, like we emerge, that is to say, Louis Marin, which could be more a defender of this generalization of the category of text in some of these books, for example, L'Opacité de la Peinture, was one of the last books, insisted upon the irreducibility of the two logic, the logic which produced discourse and the logic which produced painting, and consequently, the modes of decipherment of the one on the other. Alors, technically, it could refer to the linearity versus, which implied and imposed a logic of the decipherment versus an opening and the possibility to enter into the symbolic system in a manner or another. It could be one of the objects you can discuss. It could be also the discussion about what are the recourse, the resource for this symbolic production and what is specific when you use a form of writing, whatever it may be, alphabetic or ideographic or hieroglyphic and so on. So I think it's a very important question. There is no solution. It's another problem I have not solved, unfortunately. I continue to work, so perhaps we... hope is not absolutely... must not necessarily be abandoned.
Wonderful. Our reception is actually going to be beginning. And so I know that Roger has had, this is his third panel of the day. And so I think it is most appropriate that we continue the conversation, enjoying the wine and the food that is for the reception that's being co-sponsored by Duke University Press and the University of South Carolina. So please, I hope that you will join us in the foyer and have a drink.